You're listening to Experience Imagination, a themed entertainment design podcast presented by Falcons Creative Group. Every episode, we discuss a new topic with a panel of creative professionals. Hi, I'm Cecil McPurry, President and Chief Creative Officer of Falcons.
Hey everybody, this is Abhinav Narayan, our moderator for the episode.
Hey Cecil, how's it going?
Good, how you doing today?
Doing good. Today awesome. We are talking about interactivity in themed entertainment. Why is this an important topic for us to discuss?
You know, one of the things that I think as we continue to look at experiences being relevant to the consumers, interactivity is obviously a big part of that. Gaming has now been part of storytelling. It's a medium that we all embrace now.
And the demographic of gamers has grown as well.
That's correct. I mean, that's probably our new target market, the
gamers,
the millennials. So interactive is a very important part of our design process.
And who's joining us in our conversation today?
All right, today joining us is our interactive team, David Consolo.
Hey, how's it going?
Ben Allen.
Glad to be here.
And Andreas Latourette.
Thanks for having me.
Fantastic. Well, we'll get started on that conversation and circle back around to get your thoughts at the end.
Sounds good.
I guess I just wanted to ask in general, I feel like a lot of us at this company and in this industry are migrating to themed entertainment from game design, from that interactive realm. And I wanted to get your thoughts on what do you think might be so appealing for someone who originally looked at designing video games and is now looking at themed entertainment? Let's start with you, Ben.
So for me, personally, it is that challenge. When I first got a Vive, it was to figure out how do I make video games for virtual reality. And that is a similar thing that brought me here. I looked at Falcons and the VR technology and all the new stuff they were doing, and I realized that's what I want to do. I want to work on those challenges every day. I want to figure out how what I know translates into interactives and the best way to go about doing that. So it brought together essentially just everything that I wanted in a game job is also what I get here.
Mm-hmm. There's with the added pioneering aspect to
it. Yes.
David.
My parents moved all the way from Italy just to live in Disney World.
Really?
And so from the beginning, we have always been theme park fans. And our goals as children, my brother and I, was to make the world a better place. And that was our goal from the beginning. I was like, how can I add to this world, this experience? And I've been making games pretty much my whole life. And finally, I'm able to employ those skills into something that is basically my destiny.
Andreas.
I would say for me, one of the reasons I got into video games was because they made me feel from a pure emotional standpoint, the same way I did when I went to a theme park. There was this immersive quality, sense of adventure, discovery, exploration. And now that I have this chance, I feel that theme parks are the perfect place to bridge this gap between virtual and real. I can make things that eventually will become tangible, like National Geographic, where you can touch a coral. Then you can go to our coral environment that's in the virtual world. We've now bridged the gap between these two disciplines, and that's why I feel like I want to continue working in this sphere and creating new content.
We talk a lot about the guest experience. It's at the core of what we do. I think we all know that there's an overlap between the guest experience and the player experience, but it would be great to hear from you guys what the definition of that overlap really is.
Well, firstly, the main difference that I've always noticed between games and themed entertainment is guests in a themed entertainment ride or area, they get to feel things. Things are tangible. They can touch them with their hands. They can smell them. And that all lends itself to the level of immersion that you can get out of a themed entertainment attraction, whereas players of a game, of any interactive video game, they get agency, so they get to change the things around them. They get to influence them in a way that a lot of times guests in a theme park do not get to do.
Interesting. You mentioned the word agency. That's a huge component to game design in general. When clients ask about wanting to incorporate an interactive experience into a themed entertainment space, would you say that that concept of agency, is that what we're talking about? In some, you know, interactivity can be a lot of different things, but is the agency the secret ingredient that we're talking about?
I honestly say that right now, interactives in theme parks are still in their infancy, and I think that's where everyone wants to go with them. But at the moment, we're not seeing that happen yet. It's definitely apparent that everyone wants to get to that point, and I think that's why, so we can get the agency. Yeah. But right now, I think we're still solving the issues behind giving it to a mass audience.
Why do we give players agency? It's so they can achieve goals. And I think if we take it and strip it all the way down to goals, we need to give players goals to achieve. And we need to do that in the simplest way possible. So we need to convey those goals and make achieving those goals very simple.
So I feel like a lot of times theme park attractions and experiences will have a goal in the sense of there's a story, there's a conflict, and the goal is that we need to somehow solve the conflict. Yes. But even if there's no interactivity there, there is still a goal. But what you're bringing up is that it almost sounds like it's really the feeling of I accomplished the goal.
And this is where agency comes in, is how can we, in the simplest way, let the player, let the guest feel like they did achieve that goal. And how do we convey that goal not only to a single person, but to a group of people? How do we make one person in a group playing an interactive feel special?
I like simple experiences. I like to have fun. I like to be energized. I like to be happy. I like to go to a themed entertainment area and feel like I'm escaping from reality without conflict.
Right.
Whenever you play a game and you are competing against each other, there's conflict. Whenever there's a chance that you might lose or gain less points than another family member, you're creating conflict.
Do you think that adding an interactive experience automatically introduces conflict because there's a chance that you could fail? Or is there a way to capture the best of interactivity, but keep it at a simple enough level that it doesn't take me away from the fact that I'm here to enjoy myself. I'm here to relax.
Yes, that's why I love lifestyle interactives.
Lifestyle interactive. Could you go ahead and define what you mean by lifestyle interactive?
They're there for information. They're there to explain. They're there, edutainment is what we call it.
Okay.
Where it's entertaining to watch, but it doesn't put pressure on you to do anything. You sit there like you do as watching a TV. You inform yourself. And I think that interactive games that our lifestyle can be as fun.
One of the first interactives that I became familiar with in themed entertainment was the Seven Dwarfs Mine Train coaster at Magic Kingdom. There's an interactive in the queue. There's a screen, but it's made to look like a water stream of some kind. And there are these gems that are floating through it. And you just use your finger, it's a touch screen, and you just move the gems into the appropriate space. How would we define that? Because I wouldn't call it edutainment, but I also don't know if it necessarily has a challenge aspect. So that's a whole different layer of interactives that could maybe start to help us solve this problem as well.
I would consider almost that as like a swing in a park, in a recess park. It's just there to keep you entertained. It's not, I mean, kids will be touching that screen forever if it means not having to wait in line. So I think it's there. It's just entertainment. It's just simple fun, and you just can turn off your brain and just keep going.
So it's simple fun. You can turn off your brain. But to bring this whole conversation back, I don't even know if there is agency, but there's the illusion of agency. Do you feel like just something as simple as that I'm just moving things on a screen, but still I feel like there's a sense of agency. I feel like there's control. I feel like I have now contributed in some way to the story, I have participated in the world. In a themed entertainment experience, is that as far as we can go in terms of the depth of interactives?
I definitely think we can go much, much further. And that goes back to my first topic of progression. The target demographic, their brain power is increasing. I mean, we're getting kids playing with their cell phones as soon as they're born.
So pretty much, yeah.
At that point, I mean, we can have interactives that are complicated, that demand more of our attention later on in our lives. I think we should push those boundaries. We should make interactives that challenge us.
To loop back to what I was saying before and to build upon what David said, because a lot of times these interactives are added on later to increase the lifetime value of a ride or to compensate for the fact that more people are coming back to this ride after some time.
Sure.
But if from the very beginning we say the interactives are going to be an integral part of the narrative, not just an add-on, then instead of demanding your attention or competing, it's just what you should keep your attention on in that moment. And I think that's the next step we need to take to get to that innovation point, I think.
If it starts to branch more into that direction, do we feel like maybe the added conflict that the interactivity brings isn't as much of a challenge anymore because it's so integrated in the story? You're already expecting a challenge from the story, so that then if it's integrated enough into the story, the challenge that the interactive poses doesn't feel as
troubling. For example, when you're waiting in a queue for a simple dark ride, you're waiting there and you're feeling excited to get on this ride. And you know after you're done, you're going to enjoy yourself. But let's say a teenager is waiting in line right before a laser tag game. They're feeling anxious. The whole time they're waiting, they're like, am I going to win? Am I going to lose? I think that feeling is an interesting thing we should really build upon. The anticipation of riding an attraction.
I think David brings up a good point. It's almost how we frame the ride, how we frame the experience before they even get into queue. Mm-hmm. What is the guest expecting when they come in? If they have the notion that when I go into this, there will be a challenge and that I can't lose, I think it's much easier to accept. That's how I feel when I play any video game. I'm accepting and ready for the possibility of defeat, and I want to use that experience to loop back into the ride or the game and do better the next time.
One thing that just occurred to me is that the role of game over has a very different meaning in themed entertainment spaces. When you're playing a video game at home by yourself, I mean, you can technically put in as much time as you want, and if you get that game over screen and the worst possible thing happened, you reload from your last checkpoint and you start over again. We don't always have that luxury, though, in themed entertainment experiences.
I think you can be positive about that. You show them different endings, but always end on a positive note. You don't want to end on a negative. I think that's a perfect balance of an interactive is always end on a positive note, but make you wanting more.
And then there's still a reason to go back and reload the last checkpoint. It's not to, it's not because there was a really depressing end because you made all of the mistakes that were possible. It's because there's something else to discover.
I like to think of it as a tiered system. The more successful you are, the further up you go in the tiers. So you could, let's say there are five tiers, you get to the fourth one, wow, you did really well. So there's that positive reinforcement, that good experience, but you didn't get the fifth tier. Are you going to let that stand, or are you going to come back and you're going to get that fifth tier?
There's always a higher mountain to climb.
Yes, higher mountain to climb.
I think the latest interactives are really hitting on that note as far as Toy Story Mania. The more points you get different plushies. You always get a plushie. Digital plushie, but you might get a better one if you score more.
Yeah. Obviously, VR is one of the first things that we think about when we think about interactivity in this space. Because everybody is talking about it, because everybody is excited about it, if we want to really keep our eyes on the horizon and look at the cutting edge thing, what's the next step beyond that?
How do we increase storytelling methods? I was actually very interested in telling a story through VR. What doors does VR open to storytelling? We can put someone in a world. How do we take them out of that world? How do we alert them that they are in that world while still being, in our world, not in VR? How do we bridge those, and what interesting story ideas can we get out of there?
To play devil's advocate, one could say that after a while, that's the VR quality of it might sound a little just gimmicky after a while. Do you feel like there is an actual substantial, tangible increase in storytelling capability and power?
I feel that there will be once the technology increases. So right now there is that gimmick aspect. I have to put a headset on. I have to be tethered to something. Wireless VR is just now getting to something acceptable for developers, let alone consumers.
So it's physically the wire that is part of the obstacle for the...
100%. It's the wire, it's the display, it's the latency. All of that, I feel like, pulls me out of the game and out of the experience. So the more barriers I can break down between our world and the VR world, to use that term, the more I can immerse the player. And that's a very simple technical limitation.
The more plugged in you physically feel, the less plugged into the story you'll be.
Yes, 100%.
But I definitely think we should keep going. We have to keep pushing. I mean, that's how the space program happened. We just have to keep going no matter how hard it is, because I see a lot of potential in the future as far as progression goes. I see people who don't normally play games be able to play the VR. My girlfriend doesn't like games at all, but she loves VR. And now I'm able to experience games in VR with her. So it's a whole encompassing aspect of interactives where we can all experience that. It's just a wonderful tool.
VR is really great at breaking the limitations to be actually playing a game. When I sit down at a mouse and keyboard and play a competitive game, there is potentially, you know, years of experience that goes into that that allows me to play with other people who also have years of experience. If I can break that down and give you something simple that you hold in each hand that does one thing, and most of the interactivity comes from moving it, comes from physically looking around, that's what I do every day. More people can play video games that way. So that's why I think that VR not only is the future of video games, it's the future of themed interactive entertainment. And I think it's going to take us there to AR and MR, but we're in baby steps, so you have to start somewhere. So that's where we are right now.
I think augmented reality is actually getting phased out and replaced with the mixed reality word, because augmented reality used to define the ability to visually see through your phone into the real world, but both of those things were technically digital. And then it started getting into the HoloLens, and it was considered an AR at the time, where the real world was visually, the light rays of the real world were going into your eyes with an overlay over 3D. But now mixed reality is a combination of both, and it's basically defining exactly what augmented reality, the name of it, should have been. So now more people are using mixed reality as a VR headset. It's just now the same. Mixed reality, in essence, means if the real world in any way, no matter how substantial, in any way is influencing your headset or your view of the 3D world, it's considered mixed reality, because you're importing that information from the real world. For instance, the Vive is not considered a mixed reality because it doesn't interface with the real world and allow you to, dodge a wall. You have to place those walls yourself, those boundaries. However, the mixed reality headset from Microsoft, it uses the outside world's information, just similar to the HoloLens, to get your positional tracking. And if you go near a desk, you see it as a virtual representation of the world. You don't see the desk, but it tells you, hey, by the way, there's the point of a desk here. And that just in it there is basically enough evidence to say it's a mixed reality, because it's sure. getting the information from there.
So I would divide up the three very simply, just a base definition of virtual reality, creating a completely new world. Mm-hmm. You put on a headset, you're somewhere else. No information goes out to the real world or comes back in, except maybe positional tracking at the most. Augmented reality is simply an overlay. For example,
onto
the real world, not being influenced by it. So with the Google Glass, I could, you know, take pictures. I would see what time it was. Something very simple like that. Augmented reality is very simple.
Mixed reality, like a HUD.
Like a HUD, yes. Mixed reality is what David was saying, where you bring a virtual world into the real world. I can look and, you know, let's say I can place an animal in this mixed reality headset. I tap, and a little bunny rabbit appears in the corner. If I look around, move, maybe come back, that bunny rabbit is still in the corner. That's mixed reality. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where the technology is leading. And I don't think it's even going to be far future, even necessarily be go to a theme park and put on a mixed reality headset and walk around the entire theme park. It's going to be, oh, we're going to a theme park. I'm just going to bring my own mixed reality headset that I bring with me everywhere. And it could be, you know, just a simple pair of eyeglasses. That would be far future in my head. But I do see that as the future of gaming, of themed entertainment, of phones. I think all of this will be blended into one.
We've done some interesting interactives for National Geographic Ocean Odyssey up in New York. We have a couple of experiences, the first being a coral reef experience where guests are able to actually point flashlights at three monitors and discover facts in a biofluorescent coral reef world. The actual flashlights are able to project a beam of light into the virtual world, and three guests are able to actually play alongside each other and discover these facts.
So Coral was actually my first project here that I worked on. And the really cool part about this is I had already used the Vive before coming here, so I knew what that was. I knew the trackers. I knew how the headset worked. And I walk in, and David shows me Coral. And he had taken the Vive trackers separately that you can buy as their own component and placed them on flashlights to get real-world tracking and putting that onto a screen. The thing that blew my mind about that was that the tracking was not using a headset at all. Traditionally, you would have a headset on and you could see these objects tracked in the headset. He ditched the headset to create a virtual world. You could move a flashlight in real life and see a move in the screen, and your flashlight beam would be projected into a world as if it were a fish tank. So that was very interesting to see it coming from someone who had relatively recently just learned how to use the Vive and program with it and create games with it.
Andreas, do you have anything you want to add?
For me, the most interesting part of the experience was getting to work with a client like National Geographic, who was so specific about what they were looking for, because there's this dedication to realism and authenticity. And it was a challenge for me to match that authenticity, to bring that authenticity to the actual experience, because this guy had figured out, David over here had figured out this insane technical system for the interactive, but then as he's troubleshooting constantly and creating more refined versions of it, I'm sitting here going, okay, well now it has to really look like a coral reef, and that's like a pretty cool thing. You can't just say, it's okay. It has to be really good, you know? So that was a challenge, and every day people would come by, give critiques, and it was a learning experience, and it was a powerful experience, really.
It's three 4K monitors side by side.
So that's another distinction to make about today's technology, I think, and this definitely shows that Nat Geo is, compared to 5 years ago, the resolution that we're making interactives at is so much higher that fidelity lends itself to being able to see every minute detail, for better or worse. So we always have to think about that. Like, how well are we portraying whatever we're tasked with portraying? Is it going to look grainy? Is it going to look beautiful? Is it going to look blocky? We have to think about these things. We can't just throw them on the screen and hope that for the best, you know? So I think that's something that we are all extremely conscious of, and is a new challenge that is only going to continue and grow as this industry grows.
I'll skip the question about what games you guys are playing.
Rainbow Six.
Best question. Destiny, I was waiting for it the entire day, and now I don't even... No, I'm just kidding.
Destiny 2, Rainbow Six, Siege.
Well, now we're just answering the question.
Yeah, it was a joke.
Want to thank our three panelists for joining us on that conversation. Cecil, any thoughts?
Wow, this is a wonderful conversation. It's nice to hear, you know, some of the dynamics of their background and how they gravitated to Falcons. That was really enriching for me to hear. And so much information about technology that influences what our future interactive experiences will be.
Absolutely.
Really refreshing conversation.
We were talking before recording a little bit about how technology is increasing at such a rate that some of the things that they were describing in the conversation have since they finished recording,
matured.
Have now evolved.
It matured. The Vive, you know, David Consola was talking about how the Vive is truly VR, and you know, it's contained without influence from the outside world. And it's interesting, it's not but a week ago or two they introduced the cameras that are embedded in the Vive Pro.
Yeah.
That now, you know, intakes real content and influences the VR. So it's happening real time.
And these are just the things that we've all got to deal with on a daily basis, that they've got to deal with on a daily basis.
That's right.
Keeps it interesting, I guess.
Yeah, no doubt. The conversation was really refreshing to hear about how the things that we're kind of used to experiencing in the theme parks, which, you know, if you think about theme park experiences, are one of the most cutting edge, visceral and immersive experiences, introducing media, you know, some of the you know, amazing experiences like 4D dark rides and what have you, still are not real time. You know, they're not real time content.
That's true. It's baked content.
Baked content. And so that whole layer of having real-time content with this other visceral and immersive experiences where
the immediate feedback exactly to what every guest is doing and
to
behaving.
Influence the story. That's what we're doing now. And, you know, you look at it as really multiple industries now converging to become one.
Yeah.
And so we're embracing all those attributes from those different, you know, industries and implementing them here. So, I mean, the guest experience now becomes even more immersive. It's not only immersive, but now you actually can influence the outcome. So that's a huge, huge. We're excited for the guest to experience that.
Total redefinition of what it means to actually be an experience.
No doubt. And I think even feature films are starting to recognize that VR is part of the real world.
Yeah, it's
Ready Player One.
It's like becoming a valid storytelling topic and medium.
Right.
Great. Well, we'll see you in the next episode.
Sounds good. This has been Experience Imagination. For more information about this episode's discussion, be sure to visit our blog at falconscreativegroup.com. And don't forget to follow Falcons Creative Group on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram.